First case for argument is United States v. Collins and McNeil. Mr. Hausman.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Brian Hausman on behalf of Mr. McNeil. The issue I'd like to raise with this Court this morning is the issue of whether exigent circumstances justified agents enforcing entry to Mr. McNeil's residence without a warrant. There was no exigency in this case, simply put, because agents had no reason to believe that evidence would be destroyed unless they returned to Mr. McNeil's home three blocks away and forced entry into the residence. There was no testimony on the record and no objective evidence that the house could even be seen from the position that they were at, which was...
Can't the police just go up to someone's house, knock on the door, and then if they hear, you know, scurrying inside or something like that, because they had reason to believe it was a drug house, then they're prepared for an immediate entry because they do then worry about destruction of evidence.
If I understand your question, Judge Posner, the question is, are the police permitted to go up to someone's door and knock and do a kind of a knock and talk? And the answer is absolutely, the police are permitted to do that. But the Constitution requires that the police be willing to be turned away if they don't have a warrant.
No, but they go out. I mean, they don't need a warrant just to knock on the person's door and try to, you know, engage them in some kind of voluntary, you know, ask for consent or something to search. Then if they have, you know, good reason to believe that that the people inside know it's the police and they're trying to destroy evidence, then why doesn't that create the kind of emergency which titles them to enter without a warrant?
In this case, Your Honor, what was learned at the door of the residence simply doesn't rise to the level of exigent circumstances. All agents know is they have reason to believe that drug activity took place there, and they knock on the door, and someone at best, according to the government's testimony, someone says the police are there, and no one comes to the door in what they consider to be a sufficient amount of time. That itself, even notwithstanding the fact that the district court failed to consider the...
But if they don't come to the door, then why isn't there really a compelling inference that they're destroying drugs? I mean, that would be the logical thing to do, right? If you can keep the police at bay for a few minutes and, you know, flush the drugs down the toilet, you're ahead of the game.
2 points on that, Your Honor, in this case. In this case, the agents created the exigency, even if there was a reasonable reason to believe at the door that drugs were going to be destroyed.
Why does just knocking on the door create the exigency? They're entitled to knock on the door.
They're entitled to knock on the door if they're willing to be turned away from the door. Let's assume that... If their intention was to gain consent, then they never gained that consent at the door. In this case, they barged down the door before anyone even came to it. So they're permitted to go to the door at that point if they're willing to be turned away, because the Constitution requires them either to obtain a warrant when they have probable cause, or at the moment that they have probable cause, if some emergency, in this case the destruction of evidence, requires them to act otherwise, then the police are permitted to do so. In this case, probable cause arises by the government's testimony, 10 to 15 minutes before agents approached the house.
Well, I thought that was your point, that here there was that 15-minute period of time during which they could have, this was a federal operation, so federal rules apply, during which they could have gotten a telephone warrant, at which point they show up at the front door of the house with battering ram in hand and are able to execute that warrant.
That's correct. That is one of the points we make in our briefs, Your Honor. But I would point out that the 10 to 15-minute time period is created by the government in this case. It's created by the agents. That is,
and there's no exigency until they come to the door.
Absolutely
not. As far as we know. There's no indication that at the point of arrest, people are using their cell phones to call back to the house to say, the police have just taken us, get rid of the drugs, or anything like that.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And there's no evidence that any sirens were used, or in terms of when you look at the geography, there's no issue, is there, really, that someone could have seen anything? In other words, seen where the one guy was apprehended, you know, in relation to the house.
There's absolutely no issue. There's no evidence on that score. And in fact, the evidence that was submitted at the suppression hearing and at trial indicated that the house couldn't be seen from that position. Agent Warren, the primary officer on the scene, testified that he had difficulty seeing the front of the house from his position earlier that morning, 50 yards from the house, with the use of a telephoto camera lens and binoculars.
He received a call that there was a domestic disturbance at some place, and they go there, and they knock on the door, and they hear screaming inside. Then they could barge in, right?
Potentially, if the agents had a reasonable belief.
Couldn't they barge in that case?
If the
yes or no?
I believe they may be able to, but that's not this
Why
case.
Why do they may be able to?
Because screaming alone, I'm not sure what the nature of the screaming would be.
Really? They're called as domestic disturbance. They hear people screaming. They have to get a warrant.
No, surely human safety is another type of exigency. No one is screaming in your case. We understand that. But there are different kinds of exigency. And so we need to know which type of exigency requires, you know, letting whatever is going to happen inside the house and when you can just go in. I think human safety is a pretty well-established one.
And I would say that this, in this case, the only thing the government advances is that drugs would have been destroyed if they took the time at that point to get a warrant. There was no
human safety
issue.
What the judge found was that they hear someone say the police are here. They know it's a drug house. They hear someone say the police are here. They hear movement running around, and they wait 35 to 40 seconds for someone to come to the door. Then they barge in. Don't they have pretty compelling reason to think that these people are doing something, knowing that the police are at the door? And what would they be doing except destroying evidence?
I think the answer, Your Honor, is that, and as this court's decisions have held many times, a police knock at the door is likely to generate movement in any house, in my house or anyone else's.
And
no,
precisely,
but I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No, you finish. Yeah. Well, precisely, what was the testimony about movement?
The testimony was that it was, quote, movement. It was Officer Collins, who was the primary officer on the scene at that time, testified that he heard movement. The government and the district court have indicated that it was running. That testimony is found nowhere in the record.
So we don't know if it's running, if it's movement toward the door, if it's movement away from the door.
There's no indication of that. The only indication.
So you're saying Judge Connelly was wrong when he said he heard movement or what he described as running inside the house. Say there's no basis for that.
That's correct. Officer Marquez at the front door does not testify that it was running. He testifies that it was movement of some type. The facts in this case indicate that the district court's ruling essentially would create a de facto rule that any time you have a traffic stop in the defendant's neighborhood, regardless of whether there's reason to think that the police have been observed, agents can simply create exigent circumstances by going up to the door with a battering ram. And if they're not let in, they've created for themselves an exigent circumstance. That, I would submit, is not the law.
On your second issue, the issue about the consent, why isn't the inference of consent perfectly plausible in a case like this? Because what gain would there have been to Collins or McNeil from refusing to allow the search? Or would they delay it for a half hour while the police get a warrant?
I think the correct question, Judge Posner, is not whether under different circumstances Mr. McNeil may have had a reason to cooperate. The question is whether under these circumstances his choice to do so was free and voluntary.
Whether it's free or voluntary depends in part on the alternatives he has. And if there's nothing to be gained from not cooperating, then why would you think it made a difference that he was handcuffed, right? Why do you think he was coerced when, if there were no intimidating circumstances, he'd still have absolutely nothing to gain from refusing to consent, right?
I think there were intimidating circumstances in this.
No, you don't understand. The circumstances may have been intimidating. The question is, if there were no intimidating circumstances, would his decision have been made any different?
I think it would have.
Well, what would he have had to gain from withholding his consent?
He would have had the opportunity potentially to meet with counsel. He would have had the opportunity to have a neutral magistrate.
Wait. What do you mean? I'm talking about consent to search.
I agree. I think he would have had the opportunity to have a neutral magistrate evaluate whether the police at that point had probable cause for the search.
There's any question they could get a warrant.
I see that my time is up, Your Honor.
No question they can get a warrant.
No, we haven't contested that there was probable cause for a warrant.
Once they're in the house, there's no probable cause to get a search warrant?
Oh, you misunderstood me, Your Honor. We're not contesting that there was probable cause for a warrant.
Yes, precisely, so that he had nothing to gain from denying permission because there was no question they could obtain a warrant.
I think the issue is simply what the circumstances were and whether his choice was free and voluntary, Your Honor. That's all I can say in response to that question.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Hausman. Mr. Porter?
Your Honors, good morning. The first issue that we've discussed this morning is this issue of exigent circumstances. And a couple of things to make clear. The first is that this is not a knock-and-talk case. Although
The officer did not hear running and did not testify that he heard running?
The record is that the officer testified that he heard movement. He heard the police are here, those people are here, and he waited 30 to 40.
Why did the judge say he heard movement or what he described as running inside the house?
Judge, I'd have to consult the record.
Wait a second, consult the record. What do you mean?
My recollection in terms of what we presented was that there was movement within the house. And there was 30 to 45 seconds.
No, we know about the 35 or 40 seconds, yes. But the question is, did he hear running feet? did he testify to that?
I believe what he testified to was that there was movement. I don't know that there was.
And the answer is no.
So the answer is no.
Yeah, that's the big fact. I mean, that's a critical fact. Running is very different from hearing movement, at least for me. I mean, that's critical, whether it was running or it was just movement.
Judge, the
running feet.
Again, the record is whatever the record is, and I don't. What we cited in our brief was that there was movement that the officer Marquez heard. The police are here. Those people are here. He waited 30 to 45 seconds.
So then, even though you can't say exactly what the record says, it's quite likely that in your brief, if someone testified to running feet, it would have been in your brief.
One would think.
And but, see, the problem is, I mean, the other testimony seems to indicate that these people were downstairs. Movement could be consistent even over a 30 to 45 second period with people coming to the door to respond, you know, knowing that it's the police and coming to the door to respond. And when, you know, my concern is with only movement and the police are at the door, which is evidence the district court credits, then there really isn't a warrant requirement anymore for drug houses, mm-hmm. because the police go to a drug house, it's known to be a drug house, they knock on the door, they wait 30 seconds, nobody comes to the door, and boom, in they go, because it, you know, somebody might try to destroy evidence.
A couple of points, Your Honor. Number one, in terms of the record, if the people were in the basement, the evidence was that the officer heard those people are here, the police are here, which suggests that the judge, I don't believe, made a finding in terms of where they were. But in this house that had double doors, the judge didn't make that finding that Officer Marquez heard that, and so the inference isn't clear that they would be in the basement then. That he heard that, it would have been close to the door, and she was arrested. The female, Candace Black, was arrested on the first floor when they entered the residence.
Well, which might be consistent with her heading toward the door, too. I mean, I think you're reading a lot into how acute Officer Marquez's hearing is. we really don't know where the people were in the house. We know where some of the things were found, but we don't know where they were.
But we do know what he heard. I mean, Judge Cannelli found him to be credible. I'm sorry.
We know the statement that he made. The police are at the door, but surely that's not an incriminating statement. It's not as though Judge Cannelli finds that she says, you know, flush the stuff down the toilet or.
No, there was not evidence of that.
No,
there certainly wasn't evidence of that. But Judge, this isn't the issue here. Isn't whether there's a warrant to search. This is the issue is exigent circumstances.
Whether there's exigency, mm-hmm. And if the only thing we know is the police are at the door, is spoken inside the house, and then you hear movement, which could be walking, which could be somebody even coming to the door. Where's the exigency?
The exigency is that they saw. 10 or 15 minutes before, and again, we talk about when the exigency is created, and this is a fluid situation, and we ask what is objectively reasonable for these officers to do.
But what did they see? I mean, the arrest takes place 3 blocks away.
Actually, I believe it takes place a block and a half away.
Well, okay, so that you can't see. You know, we know what these neighborhoods look like. You're not sitting there unless you're out in the front with your binoculars, and apparently even that wasn't doing too much good. I don't see where the exigency. Mm-hmm.
The exigency is when they see this, where there is clearly probable cause that there is evidence at that house.
So
and
that's
drug
my
evidence.
Rule. So all drug houses, there's no more warrant requirement. Mm-hmm.
No, it's not. We're compressing, I believe, the issue of exigency and the issue of a warrant. The exigency is when you knock on the door and you hear you in the Robles
case. Were they in uniform, the police?
I believe that there were approximately 4 to 6 officers around. I believe there was testimony that some of them were uniformed.
Okay, so what would be an example of a case, a crowd of police, obviously police, because they're in uniform, come to the drug house and knock. And so what would be a case in which there were no mm-hmm. exigent circumstances in that situation? They knock because they've been, you know, parading around in their uniforms. They know that the inmates know that the police are there. So suppose it just been the 30 seconds elapse. Could they have barged in at that point?
I think they could have. I think the Robles, U.S. v. Robles, teaches that they could have.
But that really makes Judge Wood's point, right?
Yes.
It says that there is no warrant requirement. If you have probable cause to believe that a place is a drug house, you don't need a warrant. You don't need a warrant, period. What difference would it make if the person opens the door after 1 second? Because there may be the accomplices in the back busy flushing things down. So the police are going to go charging in, right? On your theory.
Again, Your Honor, in the case of the 30 seconds, the issue is, can they secure the residence to then get a warrant?
In the 1 second case, they knock on the bunch of crowd of policemen, they knock on the door, and the doors open immediately by the drug house's butler. Well, at this point, the police, on your reasoning, they have to worry that since they have really identified themselves by their uniforms, who they are, why they're there, it's obvious why they're there, that people in the back room are busy flushing. So why wouldn't they, as soon as the door is open, go flooding through the house, swarming through the house to make sure no one is destroying evidence?
I think the
would
case
that be permissible?
I think the case law in Robles suggests that it would be permissible, Your Honor, to secure the residence.
You've completely mm-hmm. abolished any warrant requirement for drug houses. You're saying if there's a drug house, the police can barge in and search it without a warrant because they know that, at least if they're in uniform or they're look like cops, that a danger of evidence destruction arises the moment they appear.
Judge, I think it's important to note that that's not this case.
It isn't that important to notice it's not this case because we want to know what the government's position is.
In terms of
see any difference between this case and the one second case.
Well, I see factual differences between the record here and the factual differences there.
Factual differences don't count unless they have legal significance. Now, if you want to articulate a rule which puts this case on one side and the one second on another, that's fine. You haven't suggested any such.
The issue in terms of the one second case is what the cases talk about, what the Robles type case talks about.
What the cases talk about. What's your view? Right?
My view is that what these cases talk about and what
I'm not interested in what these cases talk about. I'm interested in what you think is the proper rule.
I think the proper rule here, Judge, is in this situation,
not in
preserving
this situation.
The factual situation that Your Honor just suggested is preserving the status quo. And where we have probable cause in this case, it's permissible to preserve the status quo until we go to a magistrate and get a search warrant.
That's the one-second case.
Yes.
You know, you don't see any legal difference between that and our case. You can't see a legal difference.
I don't see a legal difference between that and the facts in this case where there are plainly exigent circumstances when they knock on the door.
Plainly exigent circumstances in my one-second case, according to you.
I think there are.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Porter. The time had expired. If you want a minute, you may have it. Okay. Well, thank you very much. And you were appointed, were you not? So we thank you for your efforts on behalf of your client.